Coming up this week on the Course of Life podcast, week three in a row on the PGA Tour, where putting was pretty much everything and birdies were mandatory at PGA West. And we have a bit of a doppelganger situation developing, which we'll get into. Plus, it was DK on the LPGA and DP World Tour in Dubai. We have action across the globe. We're tuned into a throwback movie and a board game. And this week's guest, PGA pro and inventor coach Martin Chuck. You've definitely seen his videos and the amazing products he's created for golfers out there. A really cool conversation heading into PGA show week, plus the greatest weekend ever in the NFL. And we always end with food, all of it brought to you by our friends at Club Doctor Golf. Club Doctor, the number one golf club care solution. It's very important to have clean clubs for many reasons. They improve club performance, ball spin, ball speed, control. But really, the one I love to harp on every week is that when you look down and you're ready to fire and give it your best, you want to make sure you're looking at a clean club face. It just gives you a little bit better attitude towards the shot, life, and everything going on the course. So make sure you get Club Doctor for your club cleaning solution. They've got the spray or the polish. They both work amazingly. They restore club shine. The cleaning solution is a great quick portable solution as well on the course. They are Amazon's choice for golf club polish, and they're our choice as well too. And we're going to give you a discount right now. Head to clubdoctorgolf.com. That's clubdoctorgolf.com and use the code COL for 15% off any purchase. That's promo code COL for 15% off any purchase at clubdoctorgolf.com.
Interwebs, and welcome to Course of Life, part of the Morning Read Podcast Network. We are proud to be presented by our friends at Desert Fox Golf, Tosi Stacks, Club Doctor Golf, and Volvic. I'm Michael, he's Alex. And Alex, we were back stateside on the PGA Tour this last weekend for the American Express. We'll get to the winner of the American Express in just a moment, but let's first talk about Jon Rahm and his hot mic situation, I guess we could say, that happened as he was just totally and completely upset with the layout and the way the course was playing.
Yeah, not hiding any emotions at all. Let's see, off the top of our head, who's our hot mic All-American squad here? Definitely Jordan Spieth, mm-hmm. Definitely Rahm. Who else we got? Patrick Reed, for sure. Well, when these guys catch a hot mic and you hear them say something about the course, you're always intrigued. Jon Rahm, kind of very critical. Now, listen, the EMX is admittedly kind of a pro-am format, so a lot of pins in the center of the green. It's a stadium course. There's not a lot of hole tricks to it. And it ends up turning into, like I mentioned at the top, a putting contest. So he got caught on a hot mic walking between one green and one tee, calling it a piece of shit layout and a putting contest. There were a couple of other colorful words in there. The hot mic moment was intriguing nonetheless, but you could tell Rahm just a little irritated this week, despite the fact that he ended up playing decently. Rahm was not having much of the setup this week at PGA West.
You know, I can understand the frustration, but this is early in the season. This is not a major. It doesn't matter.
You know, I don't know why he's not used to this at this point. He's been on tour long enough to know that there's certain weeks where the course, like this week, fortunately, is going to be set up for par as your friend. And we're going to have a normal looking score. However, there's venues in Hawaii and there's venues on the West Coast like the MX that are just set up for a whole ton of birdies. And it ends up becoming a putting contest, like he said, for better or for worse. Nonetheless, Rahm's hot mic moment, a funny one this past weekend.
It was indeed. Of course, we had a birdie fest throughout, as you probably guessed, if you weren't living under a rock this past week. And so the winner of the American Express was Harris English. Hudson Swafford. Hudson Swafford.
Yes, that's right. The confusion around the globe. Everyone just start Googling in case you haven't seen pictures of Harris English and Hudson Swafford side by side. it's pretty scary. I don't know if you've done this recently, Mike. I'll give you a second to do it right now, but they're both about the same age. Okay. Yeah. They both come from kind of a Southern Georgia background. All right. Mm-hmm. They've got very, very similar facial structure. They also choose to have about the same haircut too. So there is really a true doppelganger situation going on. And I think the thing that really adds to it is they're both at about the same point in their career. They're guys that have both won a couple times. You know who they are by name, but you might not be able to pick them out at a grocery store. So it's creating quite a bit of confusion here with our audience and just on social media in general.
Yeah, I mean, if you looked at these pictures and you didn't know what, you know, maybe you didn't really know Harris English that well, but you knew kind of what he looked like, you would look at this and just be like, that's Harris English, right?
It's really stunning. Take a look for yourself. Hudson Swafford. Let's throw something up on Instagram at COL Podcast this week, yeah, and do a story or a post on a doppelganger comparison and get everyone's viewpoints of who won last Sunday. Because I'm not really quite 100% sure. To be totally honest, I thought it was going to be Patrick Cantlay. That was my pick on Twitter this past week. Yeah. He was rolling through Thursday and Friday, but he got overtaken and got quiet on the weekend. Nonetheless, it was indeed, I'm pretty sure, Hudson Swafford got the win at the
end. And for the second time in 5 years at the American Express, Hudson Swafford did it. So
that was cool. At one other moment, I'll shout out to his little baby boy came running down the hill to give him a great hug after he won. Oh, always a great moment on golf broadcasts. Is the kid running out after the dad? This kid's going to be a running back. He was bowling downhill. This kid was full steam ahead to hug daddy. A great moment on the PGA Tour socials as well, if you want to check that out. But shout out to Hudson for getting it done.
Let's switch over to the other coast. So we had the West Coast for the PGA Tour. On the East Coast, the LPGA Tour was in Orlando. And Daniel Kang finally back in the winner's circle after not winning at all last year. So the question now stands as she wins to start the new year. And is she going to be the player of the year?
She could be, honestly. She's in that mix of five or six, I'd say. Obviously, things start with Nelly Korda and Jin Young Ko. But after that, you know, there are a list of players that could get hot, have a 3, 4, 5 win season at the right moment. And if those aforementioned names aren't there, she could sneak that award. It's early. You remember, fresh off of the COVID layoff, she won back-to-back tournaments and was like on top of the world at that moment. Things cooled off a bit in 2021, like you mentioned. But she was in control. It's funny. She was doing some interviews this past week with other podcasts saying she's still got to learn this course. She didn't even know much about the venue where they were playing. Mm-hmm. They did a new format as well too, which we'll get into, but she learned it fast enough because she got it done in style. The calling card to her game is amazing approach shots, and she was hitting them close all weekend.
Yep. She was able to shoot a 4-under 68 to win by 3 shots at the Hilton Grand Vacations Tournament of Champions. Like you said, this was a little different setup because it also was a celebrity pro-am format. It was Stableford through the whole week, which meant we had famous people or somewhat famous people playing golf alongside.
Yeah. Larry the Cable Guy, Mike, thoughts on that? Thoughts on that name? You haven't heard that one in a while.
No, and my distaste for him is the same as it was back then. I'm sorry.
Carlton from Fresh Prince. Yes, he broke the dance out, of course.
Alfonso Ribeiro.
Yeah, there were some good names. But yeah, the funny takeaway, which I know you got a kick out of on social media, was we started comparing the scores of some of the best male celebrities, like Marty Fish, tennis player and whatnot, that were playing in the tournament under the Stableford format, and comparing them to the LPGA Tour scores. Let's just say this. They did not compare. Spoilers.
Once again, and we've said this numerous times in this podcast, the best day you think you could possibly have is still nowhere near good enough to even compete with the women on the LPGA.
Yeah, and I consider myself a player, but I am nowhere near that stratosphere. And I'm talking to you, Mr. 2 or 3 handicap out there that has broken par a few times and you think you are oh so special. You would not come within 20 or 30 shots of these pros. And it was proven by some of the best celebrity former athletes teeing it up from the exact same tee boxes, by the way. Everyone's wondering, oh no, they were playing different. Nope, they were playing the same tee boxes. So just let that show on the record as well.
Let's go across the pond now as we continue to work our way around the world here. Let's go to the DP World Tour in Dubai. Can we talk about the incredible, amazing, spectacular, this is all I want in my life content coming out of the DP World Tour.
Yes.
Because they just killed it this week.
Your thoughts on the 1 yard fairway with Joel Hatton, Rory, and Colin Morikawa.
Yeah, I mean, that's it's basically like they kind of gave a giant middle finger to these players and said, good luck, guys. Ha, ha, ha. Try to hit it.
And sure enough, they did.
They did.
Terrell Hatton, the constant complainer, one of my favorite follows on social media these days. Like, he's one of those guys where, like, if you watch him a few times, you're like, oh, I hate this guy. He's a hothead. He's irritating. Why would I root for him? But then you actually kind of get used to him on a hot mic. He's another hot mic All-American right there, Terrell Hatton. Yeah. I love him on social media as well. It was cool to see him complete that challenge. But yeah. Doing real cool content in Dubai and obviously the venue showing off. And Thomas Peters got win number 6 in his career. One of those players that's big, tall European, finished 4th in the first Olympics in 2016, just hasn't really broken through on the world stage like we would have thought, but he's been getting it done consistently in his European play and his DP World Tour career in recent years. So it was good to see him get that win on Sunday.
And our attention now turns to this next week, Alex. It's Monday evening, our typical record time. And that means that tomorrow you're going to get on a jet plane. You're going to fly to Orlando for the PGA show in Orlando.
I am. The merch show, a.k.a. the Super Bowl of golf business, some would call it. It's so funny, Mike, because they were talking about how this show is trimmed down, obviously, because everything going on in the world, get it, you know, it's a different world and whatnot, new normal. Trimmed down, Mike, there's only going to be a little over 600 vendors. That's a trimmed down PGA merchandise show. Yeah. I'm like, that's enough for me, thanks. I'll have plenty of ground to cover in my 2 days there. But yeah, it's going to be fun. I'm getting there Tuesday evening, and Wednesday and Thursday are kind of the meaty days of the showroom exhibit floor. And I get to do the full tour, and it's going to be content all day, all week coming on the socials for us. So stay tuned.
What do you think what do you got planned? That's going to be the all-star thing coming out of this next week.
All right. So we've got a whole bunch of interviews. We're going to go live on Instagram for a few of them, not all of them, but some of them. So stay tuned. I'm at Course of Life Alex. It's also COL podcast as well, too. We're going to try and go Instagram live a couple times, connection permitting. We're definitely going to do a live where I just do a walkthrough and just show you a whole bunch of stuff. Here's the thing I really want to get my hands on that the golf world's been buzzing about. I know you've seen it on Instagram at least once in the last couple of weeks. The new TaylorMade Stealth driver. The cardboard wood driver with the red club face that is just rocketing around the internet right now. I'm getting my hands on that club and I'm swinging it. So that's the piece I'm looking for the most at the PGA show.
I can't wait to see you shank that. Really,
yeah,
can.
Cool. $600 for that driver, by the way, too. So exactly what you want to do is just start shanking a brand new club like that. But it's a beauty. So I'll be on the hunt for that. Again, check out Instagram, Twitter all day, Wednesday and Thursday. I got upwards of like 8 or 9 interviews scheduled, Mike. We got some past podcast guests, some new guests, and everyone in between joining. Going to be with my buddies at Desert Fox Golf there all week. It should be a good time. I'm looking forward to it. A lot of connections to be made this week.
I can't wait to see what comes out of it. And of course, then right after the PGA show, the real big event for the weekend will be Torrey Pines, because it's a Farmers Insurance Open on the PGA Tour.
Yes.
And that means that Tiger Woods is coming back at Torrey Pines, right? No, he's not. He's not coming back this year. I'm sorry. Let me bring it back down to reality. But I think there's a new favorite at Torrey Pines every year, and that's John Rahm.
Yes. Safe to say, after last year's performance, we kind of already thought that because he got his first tour win at the Farmers here several years ago with a dramatic eagle. And sure enough, he doubled down on that with the U.S. Open performance last year. So yes, he's leading the betting odds nonetheless, 7-1 favorite. And this field is absolutely loaded, Mike.
Yep.
I mean, this field has everyone you want in it, all the world's best playing. It looks like they've kind of earmarked this is their first start of the 2022 calendar officially. All your top names are there. I'll have my picks Wednesday evening at Course of Life 1 on Twitter, and you're at MWRINC. But I got to say this. I love me some birdies and a birdie fest and eagles flying. I'm glad we're going to come back down to earth and get a little bit of a test for these players this week.
Yeah, Yeah, I think John Rahm will be happy with how the course is set up at Torrey Pines, to say the least.
He will. Yeah, so he's the betting favorite. A few names I'll throw your way. You know, Hideki has been playing very well recently. We obviously saw him get a recent win. Who's to say he can't compete again? California kid Tony Finau, when will he win again? There's a little teaser for someone I'm going to talk to at the PGA show this week. Will Zalatoris could be on my card. That's a guy that's just desperately due for that big moment. You know, he's had so many good finishes recently. So we'll see which way I go. But again, Wednesday evening, you can check out our picks on Twitter for this week.
Alex, I think what you mean to say is Tuesday night, because the Farmers is starting on Wednesday morning. For the NFL on Sunday.
Oh my God. Thank you for the assist there. That's a John Stockton to Malone moment right there. I needed that big time. Tuesday night. Thank you very much. As you're listening to this right now, as this podcast comes out, check before the tournament gets going for our picks on Twitter. Yeah, a little Wednesday to Saturday action. Boy, the NFL is king, isn't it?
God. Isn't it? We'll talk about that in a minute. Yeah. We will. Let's switch over to Tuned In, where we share what we're tuning into outside of the world of sports. We got another new board game that we got during the holidays that we finally played. Called Calico.
Interesting. I like the title. Do tell.
It's a bunch of cats. It's a cat game. Well, it's not about cats, but there are cats in it. It sounds very, people are going to listen to this and go like, what?
Building a Mike's a cat guy. You're a weird cat guy. What's going on?
What's hilarious about this is that if I ever got a cat, my wife would divorce me. I'm not allowed to bring a cat into the home.
There you go. That's how much of a cat guy you are right there.
Yeah. We played this game called Calico. You're building a quilt and attracting cats to your quilt based on different patterns and things that you do on your quilt. It's an interesting concept, but it's actually can be very complicated as you're going through it because of trying to do all these different calculations and combinations and patterns to do things as the game moves on and you find out you can't do any of it. Cause there's a lot of randomness in it as well. So it's, I think we liked it. We're going to play
a true brain teaser. It sounds like,
yeah,
maybe some frustrating moments, but eventually you'll pull through. Right.
Yeah, exactly.
Love that. Awesome. What I was tuned into was an older movie that I had not seen in over 15 or 20 years, and it spawned from another movie, Mike. So Armageddon was randomly on. Classic. Yep. Ben Affleck, Bruce Willis, remember it like it was yesterday. Aerosmith song. Great moment. Great moment movie. Mm-hmm. And it got me thinking, you know, I remember Armageddon coming out, but there was one other movie from that exact same era that was eerily similar that I watched in school. And I remember it so vividly for some reason. And so we found it on TV and I made my wife watch Deep Impact. Do you remember the movie Deep Impact at all?
It was Deep Impact is that the sister movie. It's right. Like one studio came out with a movie about some sort of, you know, asteroid hitting the Earth. So another studio had to do the same thing. This one, though, got Morgan Freeman.
Yes, it did. Shout out to President Morgan Freeman as well, too.
Yes.
So the trivia question I'll put you on the spot for is, do you know the year that those movies, I believe, both came out in the same year? How about Deep Impact? What do you think that was? What do you got?
This was like late 90s, right? Like 98, 99? Yes.
Which one?
Yeah. 99.
Oh, 98. So close. But yeah, a lot of late 90s vibe from Deep Impact. And the funniest part that I take away is those CGI graphics of the wave coming over New York City. So realistic back in 98. Back in 98, let me tell you about those graphics. Those were mind-blowing. Okay. They don't quite hold up as much today, but it was a fun watch nonetheless, and it was cool to go down memory lane and check out Deep Impact.
You know, the only movie from that time that I think has CGI that really holds up, when I think about mid to late 90s movies with CGI in there, is Jurassic Park. It's the only one.
Yes, shout out Jurassic Park as well, too. So it was fun to go down a little movie memory lane there.
Let's get into this week's guest, Alex. It is, after all, PGA Show Week, so naturally we've got to have a PGA pro on, and we've got Martin Chuck, who's very popular on social media, not just for his coaching, but also the training aids he has invented through his Tour Striker brand.
Yeah, Tor Stryker is very big on social. Actually, originally connected to him through Aaron Olson, past guest of the podcast as well, too. They both worked out of the Raven and Phoenix together. And Martin has created the Tor Stryker Club, that tiny little club with the little face that helps you hit it a little bit better, make better contact. We get into that and all of his other inventions. A really cool conversation with not only a great teacher, but an interesting brain in Martin Truck.
We'll get into that conversation with Martin in just a moment. But first, we want to remind you once again of why you need to have a bright, colorful golf ball in your bag.
And not just for the vision that I'm losing as I get older either. That is a good reason too.
But. No, but that's a pretty, I mean, that alone is a very valid and good reason. But to me, it's still like you can be that odd one out on the golf course that you can know which ball is yours because everyone else is playing a white Titleist. And I mean, why? Why are you playing a white Titleist? No offense. You're not that good. You're not good enough for that white Titleist.
Yeah, especially since you're listening to this podcast regularly and you're stopping for this ad read. Yeah. I can tell you for a fact you need a ball with a little bit more control that's a little bit softer and is going to get you around the course in a little bit more of an orderly fashion than those Pro V1s you're paying $55 a dozen for.
Yeah. So instead, you're going to get a ball with all the great technology, but without the big price tag and with bright color. And that's a Volvic golf ball. That's all you need.
Yeah. I like the XT Softs. I'm going to continue playing them as well, too. And I love our friends at Volvic. I don't know if you noticed, I did that cool little circle of life drill, the putting drill, mm-hmm. where I do like the 5 footers in the circle. I posted one. That's presented by our friends at Volvic as well, too. So I love using the Volvic balls, not only in play, but when you go to like a practice green. You know exactly whose golf balls are yours. So I enjoy the XT Soft for that reason and many more. But learn more about the technology behind these balls because it's a great company and we support them and their products wholeheartedly.
That's right. So you can head on over to their website. It's volvic.com, V-O-L-V-I-K. And you can get any number of their cool, colorful golf balls. Volvic is performance in color. They have a ball for every swing. That's volvic.com.
Next up on the tee, we have a PGA professional who heads up the Tor Stryker Academy, the one and only Martin Truck joining the Course of Life. Martin, it's great having you on the podcast. Thank you for joining us.
Alex, great to be with you. Thanks for having me.
Definitely. We're going to get into all your background, the amazing products you've created through Tor Stryker and the brand as well, too, and a whole lot more. But let's start first things first. I see that you grew up with a golf and hockey background, which I'm very familiar with. I didn't play hockey growing up, but I grew up in the Northeast. So I played golf with a bunch of slapshot hockey players who were great around awesome. The course in their own right. I'm curious, is there really a parallel between the two? I saw it with my own eyes, but what was it like for you growing up learning the two?
You know, I think so. I mean, let's face it, with hockey, it's a bit of a hand-eye coordination event. You're bent over, you've got a stick in your hands. Same in golf. Now, obviously, some of the dynamics of the swing are different when you get down to the nitty-gritty and details, but the athleticism required to, say, deke out a defenseman, it lends itself nicely to learn how to chip a ball from 40 yards to a pin that's near a bunker. So I think there's a lot of parallels there that lend themselves well in the golf.
Interesting. So what was the moment for you? I'm curious, what age was that when you finally had to make the decision? I think I'm leaning golf instead of hockey.
Oh, you know, I mean, I loved hockey and I was decent at it, but I wasn't one of the best kids in Toronto. And you kind of know pretty early. And I was a good player. I played AA hockey in the Metro Toronto Hockey League.
Okay.
I got a AAA tryout. I made the worst AAA team. I was going to be about the worst kid on the worst team. And I thought long and hard about that. And I was about 14 years old. If I wanted to dedicate that much time and energy into hockey, when I really kind of knew at that age that golf was kind of my thing, that was my kind of my superpower as a kid. So I passed on the AAA hockey and I kept playing AA and I still love it. I mean, I just kind of retired from hockey this year, actually at 53, but I got the bug and I got pretty good, pretty quick. And I started winning tournaments as a 11, 12 year old. And, you know, winning is contagious, man. It's fun. And definitely. So I just kept down the golf road and really enjoyed it.
Nice. Yeah. I was going to ask if you're still getting in any runs on the ice. It sounds like you hung up the skates though.
I mean, my son is a diehard little hockey player. So I was on the ice last week with him skating around. And so, yes, I still love it. Still love following my Toronto Maple Leafs. Don't miss a game. They make me cry sometimes. I always joke the Maple Leafs are going to be my pallbearers because when I die, they can let me down one final time. So that's my pat joke for the Maple Leafs. But
that
I still
definitely
love
is
them.
They are the cardiac arrest franchise in the NHL from what I know about hockey. So I feel you on that there. So let's talk about the path you did go with golf. It's very interesting. When you talk golf in Canada and originally, there's a few names that come up when you kind of first learn about Canadian golfers. One of them particularly is Mo Norman. This was a name that was a little mysterious to me growing up as a kid because you heard things about Mo Norman and what could this guy do with a golf club and the way he swung the club. And then you saw videos of him hitting balls and you didn't believe your eyes. It sounds like you had some really cool firsthand experience with the legend of Mo Norman as well and his sweet swing.
I did. It was interesting. It was, you don't realize what you're around when you're a little kid like that. My first experience, I was at a sleepover camp and it was a pretty cool experience with my cousin. There's, 10 or 12 other kids there. It was a neat thing. There's the camp counselors. And then there's this guy, Mo Norman, who's kind of practicing all day and he's friendly enough to the kids and he's waving at us and stuff. And he's practicing all day. He wasn't our coach at the time and he didn't really coach us directly, but that was my first time I met him. And so the first time he hit a golf ball for us, I knew that what he did with a golf club was unlike anything I had ever seen to that point. The sound, the precision of strike, the command he had over the golf ball. I just knew it was like, well, what am I seeing here? And then the more I got to, I got a little older, 11, 12, 13. Every time I could see him hit balls, my dad would take me. He'd be at certain driving ranges, kind of putting on little demos. And he was like a busker. He just put his hat out and people would drop 20 bucks in or 10 bucks, whatever they could afford. And that's how he made his living. He made his living performing, hitting golf balls. And he played, obviously, a ton of Canadian professional events. And he won a bunch of them. I mean, I don't care. I mean, I've never seen Hogan play. But, as far as a PGA Tour player, Ben Hogan had the most command over his golf ball per history. But I'd have a hard time imagining anybody command their golf ball better than Mo Norman. I mean, it just doesn't seem like anybody could possibly hit it any straighter and more reliably than him. And, and everybody thinks it's like, oh, he had the magic. Like, what was the trick to it? And the trick was his blood, sweat, and tears, period. I mean, the guy had some level of autism and, his happy place was by himself on a range with a garbage bin full of golf balls and, just watching a ball come out the middle of the face and going through the window in the sky that he intended it to go through. And, that was his comfort. His comfort wasn't being around other adults. He could perform, but he wasn't comfortable in a quiet situation. Like, it took him a long time to be able to sit down and have dinner with people. Like, that was like a big hurdle for him. He was more comfortable watching juniors play or talking to kids about golf. And, he was a friendly guy and he was, golf was his thing and that was his comfort. That was his security blanket.
Yeah. And he's kind of always talked about in that light as an aside, but he's absolutely got an unbelievably smooth swing. And yeah, there's some content out there. If you dig hard enough to find really cool Mo Norman content out there, it's neat to see that you had that firsthand experience. So I'm curious what your teaching path looked like. You're now rooted in Phoenix, which we'll get to everything you're doing now, a tour striker, but how did your journey in teaching take you to Phoenix eventually?
My love for teaching started with my primary coach was another famous Canadian named George Knudsen. And George was himself a highly regarded ball striker. Jack Nicklaus said to him, it was kind of a compliment and a slap. He goes, "You've got $1 million golf swing and a 10-cent putter." And George was a beautiful striker of a golf ball. And he started a junior development program in Toronto, which I was lucky enough to become a member of when I was 12 years old. So I went through that for a few summers until he opened up his own range away from this golf course that he was teaching the junior academy at. So I'd still work at that golf course, but I would work for him too on the side. And basically what it was a private range membership. It wasn't expensive, but you had to be a member of the range. I think it was $300 a year. And for that $300, it gave you one of George's clinics, and it gave you access to the range to where you could go buy your own balls and basically, you know, have a beer, have a hot dog and practice in a kind of a private setting. And so included in that, there was guys like myself who would walk the range. And if you had a question, we were there to answer it or help you with your technique. So when I was 16, that was my first year of teaching. George said, you know, here's the basics of it. If you see this, suggest this. If you see this, suggest that. So that was my intro into teaching was when I was 16. And I really loved it because it was, you know, just helping people. And, you know, of course I was teaching adults. So here's a 16-year-old, like, you know, telling a 40-year-old how to hit it better. And I could demonstrate, obviously, because I was a pretty good player then. And it was a lot of fun to make a few bucks teaching golf.
Very neat. Tell me a little bit about kind of where you stand now in Phoenix. I've had an opportunity to take some trips out there, both for golf pleasure, but also doing some really cool content around the Waste Management Week. But that area is just an unbelievable utopia for golf and the golf industry and golf business in general. You've definitely put some roots down there with the Tour Striker Academy, which we'll get into, and everything you've created as well. Just talk to me about your decision to kind of put roots down in Phoenix and what you love so much about that area as it's conducive to your business.
Yeah. You know, I mean, I guess it's like, don't burn a bridge. That's the whole lesson because, after my brief playing career, I was a club pro in Palm Springs, had a good run there. Then I had a job in Reno, Nevada, at a nice club there. And then I took another job. I kept moving north. I was joking. I was moving back to Canada. I went up to Bend, Oregon. So then my wife, Stacy, was the one who said, hey, you know what? Why don't you just do what you love, which is teaching? And that's how the company that I was an employee of was a kind of an employee management company that was the insulation between ownership and the employees. And it was a great group called OB Sports, and they were purchased by Troon. Well, my friends at OB suggested the Raven in Phoenix, and I went down to check it out, and it's just a perfect place for me. It's for what I do, which is a golf school vacation. It's close to the airport. The golf course is awesome. You know, we have a blast there. I'm on my 11th year, and it couldn't be a better place for me to be.
Definitely. And you're local to Phoenix, but for sure you're known worldwide, named one of the Golf Digest top 50 teachers in the last few years as well, too. I want to touch on that golf school vacation concept, though. So run down what that looks like. I'm sure some golfers out there are like, okay, this sounds fun. I do want lessons from you, Martin, but we get to play, right? Tell me what the balance looks like.
No, for sure. It's a 3-day camp. It's, obviously there's, it's myself and four coaches. So there's five of us that are always looking at you.
Nice.
And we break it down. We try to categorize. We want to know if you're a social golfer, if you know, you just want to knock it around. If you're a social competitive, meaning like you play in club events. If you're a competitive tournament player, it means you actually tee it up and stuff, or you got to hand your card in and play exactly by the rules. Because a lot of people don't play that. That's a different game.
Yeah.
I mean, there's hit and giggle club golf, and then there's tournament state golf and city golf. Then there's professional golf. So we want to know what style of golfer you are. We're going to coach you accordingly. And then there's, you know, obviously we want to know if you're, you know, a beginner, an intermediate, you're considered experienced. And then we test you. We kind of get an idea for your speed, path to face situations. We ask you what you want to get out of the camp. And then we take the group and divide it into okay, these people are like-minded. These people are more of your serious diehards. And then we assign a coach. And all my coaches are fantastic. And then of course I'm hovering over all the groups and adding my input, but it's a 3-day experience where, you know, we do testing day one, just to kind of get an idea what you do. And then we get into the fixing or into the suggestions and try to challenge the golfer as much as we can and explain that the only thing you can really control as a golfer is you. You can't really control the ball. If you control you nicely, and the way to control you nicely is through great routine, great setup, understanding how to, you know, choose a shot, walk into the shot correctly, and then, you know, have some freedom in your motion and then accept the outcome. And if the outcome is great, good for you. If the outcome is not so good, that's fine. Rinse, repeat, do it all again. And so we try to coach that way. And then obviously there's different styles of players, but it's a 3-day camp. And, you know, once you get to lunch, we have a break. That's fine. In the afternoon, we do a bit more work. And then at about 2:00, we take the group out to play. So each coach plays with three people, and there's situational things that come up, like, you know, funky side hill lie or strategy into the green, depending on your ball speed. If you're a slow hitter, how do you do it? If you're a faster ball speed, what can you do? You know, so it's that kind of thing. And I'm proud to say that like every camp, every week, there's two or three people from previous years in every camp, you know? So it's like, I try to create friends first. And then, you know, once you create a friendly environment, learning can happen. And it's been a blast. I'm blessed. It's a lot of fun.
Nice. Definitely a good sign off if you got regulars coming back too. So a testament to those golf school vacations. And yeah, Phoenix, amazing destination to do it in. Let's talk about the inventor in you. And, you know, obviously sure, these ideas that come through, you know, yourself, the Tour Striker team, and everyone that goes into the academy. I want to run through a few, because we talked about Mo Norman, we talked about better contact. And one of the best things that came out of COVID for myself was I got a net for my backyard. I find myself doing a 10-minute a day golf routine where I'm just hitting 15 wedges or 15 seven irons. But I'll tell you, over time, I'm starting to make a lot better contact more consistently. Talk to me about the Tour Striker club as it helps with something like that, because I've swung it before, and that concept of just making better contact more often, and how that can help any golfer in any swing.
Yeah, you know, it's just, you know, obviously I taught a long time, and going back now, it's about 15 years. I had this new guy sign up for a lesson. He was a really smart fella, lovely man. And so the first lesson always starts off the same way. Just kind of watch, observe. And he had that, he was trying to do more than he needed to. He was trying to scoop the ball up in the air and make it fly. And yet this guy was literally a retired rocket scientist. And so I tried to explain, okay, the club actually doesn't, it moves through this dynamic space in a different position than how it starts statically. And so I try to explain that. And some people can get that. Well, this fella didn't. So I'm thinking to myself, okay, how do I really inspire change with this guy? Because no matter what I was saying in the first couple of our, you know, six pack of lessons, he always defaulted to his Stolle pick scoop. And so I went in the cart barn and I took an old club. It was a Jerry Barber golf club. It was a tour player in the 60s.
Nice.
Good and shot. I took this club and I ground off the leading edge. Like, it looked like half of a face. Like when I showed him, when he showed up for his next lesson, he looked at me and said, "You can't hit that." And I said, "Watch." And then I hit a couple and they flew pretty well. And he goes, "Huh, I see." Because basically I had elevated the leading edge all the way up to the equator of the ball for the most part. So the only way to get the leading edge below the equator was to lean the shaft forward. And that angle then got the leading edge below the equator, so the ball could get inspired to go up by the different loft, that the loft that was presented. Even though the loft was way stronger, it was still loft. Mm. And then he had the little idea light go on in his head. I could see it, and it changed his golf swing right away. I'd be lying to say that he hit every shot perfect. He didn't, but he changed. Like, it was immediate. And then I went home to my wife Stacy and I'm like, "Babe, this thing changed a dude in like a minute." She's like, "What are you talking about?" I said, "Because he looked at this, he realized the way he was trying to do it absolutely didn't work. He had to do it differently." So he did. And so the guy learned quicker. And my job as a coach is just to try to instill learning, right? How to self-develop. I don't want you to play Martin Chuck golf. I want you to play your golf, but sort of guided so that you self-organize and develop it yourself. And in with my training products, what I like to think I expedite the process a bit, because if you got to feel the change. It's one thing to conceptualize it or be intellectual about it, but you got to feel it. And once you feel it, you're like, "Ooh, okay, I get it." And that feeling may be a different internal dialogue to you than some other person. And the coach's language doesn't even matter, frankly. Like, I've given lessons where we don't say a word to each other. They're hysterical lessons, and for a reason, because I've had students that either talk too much or we laugh too hard or whatever. And I just say, "Hey, listen, let's do the next 5 minutes, no words." And it's a funny lesson, but it's meaningful because I can nod or I can thumbs up and I can manipulate hands and move forms around and open hands. Or, you know what I mean? And that way words don't confuse things. Well, training aids don't confuse, they're not language, they're feelings. And so I like to think that they, you know, produce a feel quickly, and that's my goal.
That's an awesome origin story for this Tour Striker Club, indeed. Another one I want to touch on is the Smart Ball, which is very simple. First off, I introduced myself to you as my birth name, Alex, but in reality, I am a chicken wing Charlie, like you say famously in your videos. So I do have this issue with my arms in the backswing. Tell everyone and explain kind of how the Smart Ball came to be and what that does for a swing like mine.
Well, you know, all it is about, it's a mousetrap. So there is the smart ball. There was a product on the market years ago that was very, very good, albeit a little bit heavy and hard to travel with. And it's called the impact ball. And I had one and I used one and I liked it. And it was kind of a foam Nerf ball with wedges cut out and you fit your arms around it. So I thought, okay, you know, I don't like to step on anybody's toes, but I asked my attorney, I go, I want to create this inflatable thing and I want a lanyard because I used to use that impact ball with students all the time. They'd always drop it. It would land. It's like a football would hit and would roll off in an odd angle and you'd be like chasing it down. And so we created an inflatable ball with an adjustable lanyard just so that if you can manage your arms during your swing, your elbows don't separate a great deal in the backswing or through impact, you're also managing your wrist conditions because the more you bend your elbows, your wrists bend. They don't work independently. So if you have organized elbows that are staying, elbows can bend, they just can't separate. And if you can kind of manage that, then your wrist conditions are more reliable. And if your wrist conditions are more reliable, you're presenting the loft to the ball the same, you know, generally the same way, and that you get the outcomes that are what people want, which is consistent. I mean, you want your eight iron to fly the, you know, if it's like some normal guy and they fly eight iron 140, that's what you want it to fly. You don't want to hit a good one and have it go 128 into the water. You want it to fly 140. Well, if your wrist conditions are all over the place because your elbows separate a bunch, you're going to get a variety of delivered loft. And that delivered loft is inconsistency because your golf ball doesn't get the same speed message from your club swing speed because your delivered loft isn't as strong. It varies all the time. So the smart ball is just an inflatable ball that's pretty resilient. And you wear it over your neck or you deflate it and wear it under an armpit if you want some other level of connection. And it's been awesome. It's probably the most used training aid on tour for years and years now.
Definitely. You see it all over tour ranges and it's neat to get that context for exactly what it does. They talk about having a connected golf swing and that's definitely a part of it. So those are just a sample of the things that you can see from Tour Striker Golf and everything that you've created. I'm curious yourself and Tour Striker team as being an inventor in your own right, you know, with these ideas that you get in the heat of teaching and whatnot, for tips for anyone who's creating their own idea out there, whether it's in or outside of golf, what are like the first few things that you do as an inventor that you do with an idea that's fresh in your brain?
So the first thing is do not invest a penny until you know if you are infringing on somebody. So yes. I mean, you can go to Google Patents and do some searches, but honestly, it's really a needle in a haystack and you need a professional to kind of find that needle for you. So I would say if you think you have a novel concept, fantastic. Call a patent attorney and tell them about it. They'll sign a non-disclosure and let them do a patent search. And, you know, every attorney is a different price, but trust me, I've had people spend a lot of time and energy going down the road of a great idea only to find out that great idea has been already developed and it's some guy just is sitting on it, doesn't know how to sell it or just, you know what I mean?
Right.
But they own it. And so as soon as you try to sell it, they're obviously going to be like, hey, I know I didn't sell it, but that's my idea and here's my patent. So you got to cease and desist or you got to pay them. So you can make one in your garage and goof off and have fun with your stuff. But if you intend to be commercial, please just see a patent attorney and see if you're infringing. And, you know, attorneys are really good at looking at prior art and seeing how, if in fact you are infringing, you know, you can work around it to in a legal way that you're not, and it makes everybody happy, and then you can go forward. But don't waste time and money going down the road of trying to develop something because maybe somebody's already done it.
Yeah, love those tips from an inventor himself. It's Martin Chuck, Martin Chuck PGA and Tour Striker Golf on Instagram. You can follow him there for all of his content and products as well. Let's get to some rapid fire questions before we wrap up here. We have a mutual friend that you previously worked with, Aaron Olson, and he went on and on about how great the facilities are there at the Raven, everything you've done. Talk to me about the range at the Raven. I see some beautiful mountainside content that you put out there from your time at the range. How great is the facility you teach at currently?
Yeah, so it's a public facility and it's a must play when you come to the Phoenix Scottsdale area. It's priced right. The golf course will not kick your teeth in. It's always in great shape. It's as challenging as you want it to be, but it will, you'll have a lovely time.
Nice.
The range we practice on, you know, you're hitting due south toward the South Mountains. It's gorgeous. The turf is perfect. The balls are nice. Aaron Olson's one of my dear pals. He's one of the best coaches I know. And he got hired away to go to Monterey Peninsula Country Club. And he's got a fantastic job in Pebble Beach, California. And I mean, he did a great job for me and made a decent living. But what he did there, what he's got going on up there right now is fantastic. He's more in line with his awesomeness. So I'm super proud of him. But yeah, the Raven's great. If you come to Arizona, Phoenix area, you got to come play the Raven.
Definitely will be stopping by for sure. Let's talk about what's out there in the world of golf right now. You're seeing swings every day. There's a lot of guys in the top of the world rankings in terms of PGA or LPGA tour coverage that have some great swings out there. Who are some of your favorite actions to watch on tour right now, women or men?
Ooh, man. You know, the quarter, how do you not like Nelly Korda's golf swing? I mean, come on. It's like perfect. Reminds me of Mickey Wright. And then as far as the guys go, Rory makes the club look great. I love watching Abraham Answer. And there's probably a name you didn't think I'd throw out at you, but I love watching him swing it. He's not a big guy, yet he produces a lot of speed and smashes it. I think coaching has gotten so much better. You know, that coaches are kind of know how to really understand like club movement, and they understand matchups for golfers. Like we teach, most of my clients that come to see me for the camp are 50 to 80 years old, you know, and even older. I had a 90-year-old 2 years ago. He's awesome. He's a stud. Nice. And so you don't teach a 75-year-old guy like you teach a 20-year-old guy, because the body's different. They can't, they can both hit it great, but they're not going to hit it. They're not going to do the same things to hit it great. And a coach cannot teach the same way or they will fail, you know, and it, I fail and I've been doing this 35 years. I'm pretty good at it, I like to think, but you got to look at the individual and see what they're capable of and find the matchup that makes the most sense for their club path and angle of attack. You know, I'm really looking at swing direction, low point control, and how to make that work based on the target line. And then we call it lazy Susan at the golf school, meaning that if we're having dinner together, you want the mashed potatoes, I could spin that lazy Susan around and you could spin it and I can get the peas. So we can take the golfer and aim the golfer a certain way so that their body type and style can relate to the target line nicely. And that's a big deal. And I think coaches out there are starting to understand that. And that's why I think golfers are getting a little bit better.
Nice. I appreciate the way you used the word matchup there, trying to find what works for each golfer. And fantastic lazy Susan analogy. It's almost like you knew we were going to end with a couple of food questions. We love to end with food on all of our podcasts as well, too. Talk to me about dining in Phoenix. I've been out in Old Town. I've been out in downtown, but I'm sure there's some pretty cool places that you've been to in your times there that are maybe a little under the radar. When people come to the Valley area, what are your favorites?
One cute story under the radar for you. Okay. So I'm doing a golf school at Royal Port Rush with my dear friend, Andrew Rice, one of the best humans going and a fantastic coach. His golf school is in Savannah, Georgia. And so Andrew and I have this group of people there, and it's a blustery day at Port Rush. And it's also in concurrent with Rory McIlroy, who was doing a TaylorMade golf channel promotion thing. Well, four people from around the world won an opportunity to play golf with Rory. How cool is that, right? That's super at Royal Port Rush. So these four people are there, and there's a bit of a mob around them, a bit of media and this and that. So I figure I'll have I'm a Rory fanboy. I want to talk to him, but it's hard to get close to him. And there's no spectators. It's just a couple club members and media and these four winners, and then my team, me and Ricey, and then the golf school peeps. So anyway, Andrew has enough sense to say, hey, let's go watch Rory play the last couple of holes. Well, there's nobody on the golf course. It's in October and it's kind of a cool day. And we walk out there. So there's like our group, like 14 of us. And then there's about four or five media, and there's a four or five camera people. And then these four people. Well, this one lady, and this is why I'm getting to the restaurant bit here in a sec, circling back, I promise. So this one lady's in the group. And so I say to the lady, cause she sounds like me. Everybody else is from some part of the world. I said to her, hey, where are you from? She goes, Arizona. I go, no way, I live in Arizona. She goes, where do you live? I say, Chandler. She goes, you're kidding. I say, nope. She goes, I own DC Steakhouse, which stands for Downtown Chandler Steakhouse, which happens, by the way, to be Chicken Wing Charlie, happens to be about 1,000 yards from my house. And I take my wife there for dinner randomly. So I meet the proprietor of our like favorite steakhouse in Royal Portrush, who has won the opportunity to play golf with Rory, which is the coolest thing ever, at one of the cooler venues ever. And so we became friends. And then, of course, you know, when we go into the steakhouse, it's always just so great to reminisce about that unbelievable day that I had coaching people there and she had playing golf with Rory.
Yeah, an immediate connection to Phoenix food. I love that. So DC Steakhouse it is. I will note that one down.
Downtown Chandler.
Yeah. I love that. Downtown Chandler. Let's finish with our 19th hole question. When you get in from a long day teaching, getting into the clubhouse at the Raven, what's your go-to choice for like a meal and a drink of choice after a day on the course?
Well, so the Raven is not open for dinner. So I just, you know, just thank the bag boys and tip the bag boys for a good day. And I head to my car. When I get home, I usually unwind with what I call the Marty Rita. Do you want to know what the Marty Rita is?
Yes, please do tell.
Yes. So the Marty Rita is a little is a tequila, and it's a lovely tequila, and it's oh gosh, I'm having a mind meld here. It's what's the name of the tequila? It's a 1939 tequila. It's got a family name to it, but I forget. Okay. And I drink the Reposado.
Nice.
And so it's just soda water, the juice of one squeezed lime, like a good squeeze from a whole lime, you know, and then a shot, maybe two of that. And then to make it a little Canadian, I took one little teaspoon of maple syrup, and that is your Marty Rita. And it is delicious. Takes the edge off a day of watching balls slice to the right.
Indeed. So I've done maple syrup with a whiskey cocktail, but have not with tequila. So I'm going to have to venture and try one myself.
There you go.
I love that suggestion.
Doesn't take much. Just a dollop. Oh, it's Gonzales. Gonzales, 1939.
Nice. Yeah. Love that. Awesome. Martin, thank you so much for hopping on the Course of Life. Looking forward to more content and great products coming from the Tour Striker Academy. And next time I'm out in Phoenix, I'll make a point to see you out there, right?
Please pop by and say hello. It's great to be with you.
That interview with Martin Chuck is brought to you by Desert Fox Golf, our friends of the show and the makers of the Phone Caddy. The Phone Caddy lets you strap your phone right onto the side of your golf cart so it's easy to view and use all day long. No more fumbling around the dark spaces of your golf cart, dropping your phone on the seat, or even worse, onto the grass as you drive away. The Phone Caddy keeps you locked in safely so you can stay locked into your round. It'll be the talk of your foursome and a great gift for any golfer in your life. And for our listeners, you can save 10% off your purchase of a Phone Caddy with the promo code COURSEOFLIFE. It comes in a range of colors, and you can even show your support with their patriotic line. So head on over to desertfoxgolf.com to get your Phone Caddy, and don't forget to use the promo code COURSEOFLIFE to save 10%. Again, that's promo code COURSEOFLIFE at desertfoxgolf.com. And we're back. Great chat there with Martin. I love the idea of chicken wings and chicken wing Charlie. I think that's a great, that's just something too, that everyone's going to think of that when you're doing it, and you're going to know what you can visualize that in yourself when you're doing a swing, I think.
You know, it's nice when there's a teacher that just takes really easy life applications and applies them to teaching golf. So just really dumb it down for me. Like, just make it incredibly idiot-proof for someone like myself. And I think a lot of people out there can agree that that resonates with him. And I love the way Martin teaches the game. Check out Tour Striker as well for those products you can use at the range or whenever you're working on your game as well, too. He's a neat guy with a very neat mind. Looking forward to connecting with him more in the future, too.
And if you like that interview we just did with Martin, plus everything else here on this podcast, give us a rating, subscribe on the podcast app of your choice. Follow us on social media, COL Podcasts on Instagram. Just shower us with likes and button pushes and all that stuff. Let everyone else ask you to do and you don't do. Just do it for us, because we're the little guy. And we will love you long time if you do it.
Yeah. And for everyone who's listening that heard us out at the PGA show or met me doing interviews, thank you for tuning in. Be sure to subscribe as well, too. We probably went viral by this point in the week by the time everyone's listening. So thanks again for the support.
Yeah. I've already quit my job. I'm doing this full time now.
I was wondering how long that was going to last. Yeah.
you know who's not quitting his job, though?
Who's that?
Tom Brady. Tom Brady is not quitting. I don't. All these people saying that he's done. He was what, number one in almost every statistical category in the league this year.
Yes.
He's playing the best football he's maybe ever played in his career, and that is saying something about Tom Brady. And you're telling me that he's going to retire? This guy's going to play until he's like dead.
I mean, he said the number. He hasn't said a lot of numbers for how long he's going to play. He just keeps saying, "Play till I don't love it anymore. Play till it's not fun anymore." He always has said the number 45, though. That's one number he was never afraid to throw out in the past 5 to 10 years about how long he wants to go. And guess what, Mike? He's 44. So that means he's got at least one left in my mind. A lot of people are thinking this is the way he's going out. I don't know, man. This doesn't seem like the way Tom Brady's going to go out.
Yeah, if he was going to go out, he would have gone out last year after winning it. So he's going to go out on a Super Bowl.
A little bit more juice there. So his last game for the season, nonetheless, though, and just an unbelievably thrilling weekend that needs to be touched on for anyone who's under a rock or didn't get to see all the NFL. It was absolutely as drama filled as it could be. We had three field goals at the buzzer and then finished with the unbelievable thriller in Kansas City between the Chiefs and the Bills. But what was your favorite tidbit or moment from the weekend? Because there were about 15. We can't even get to them all right now.
My favorite is that once again, we need to petition the NFL to change the freaking overtime rule in the playoffs. It is unacceptable that a game is decided by a coin toss. It is unacceptable.
Remember, for everyone out there, it used to be even worse. It used to just be winner of the coin toss took the ball, and then all they needed to do was kick a field goal. They didn't even have to get a touchdown to win the game. So they've taken the half step to make it a touchdown. But again, it presented the scenario where Casey went down. Buffalo never got the ball back in OT. There's a million different ways that you can change the overtime rule. I'm sure it'll be changed eventually. But the other bottom line is Buffalo's defense needs to get a stop with 13 seconds left in the game. And not like Kansas City lost all the way downfield too. So.
Yeah, you know, there's talk of the Buffalo Bills won the game and then had it stolen from them. No, the defense lost the game.
Yes, they did. I mean, for Christ's sakes, Kansas City went 44 yards in two plays in 10 seconds. Mike.
Unacceptable.
44 yards in 10 seconds.
Yeah, not cool.
So that was a crazy finish to wildcard weekend. Nonetheless, we've got the championship weekend matches set. The first one, Mike, your thoughts quickly. It's Joe Burrow. Remember, he led LSU to a national championship a couple years ago. It's his second season in Cincinnati. He is walking the walk, talking the talk. Now he's going into Arrowhead. Any chance for they get past the Chiefs, or do you like the Chiefs here heading to another Super Bowl?
You know, I think it's hard to root against the Chiefs, especially after what they just did this weekend. That said, the father-in-law is a diehard Bengals fan, so I'm all in on the Bengals.
I just like the shake it up mentality. I just like seeing new teams if it's not mine. So I'll pull for the Bengals.
That means 49ers Rams. I'm all in on the Rams.
Oh, interesting. So we're going to butt heads on this one because my guy Jimmy G has somehow snuck into the NFC Championship game. So I am pulling for Jimmy Garoppolo. So we'll see what the California rivalry yields. But the Rams could be hosting the Super Bowl in 2 weeks. Who knows?
Yeah, I mean, look, it happened last year. If we had 2 years in a row of the host team winning the Super Bowl after it like never, ever happening? I mean,
the conspiracy theorists are already going wild just at the thought of that happening. Yep. So nonetheless, championship weekend coming up. Looking forward to all the action. What an amazing weekend we had this past weekend. Looking forward to more drama here.
It was indeed. Let's talk college hockey because, of course, last week our Quinnipiac University Bobcats made their way up to number one in the rankings. They had one loss on the weekend. They lost to number eight team. I'm forgetting who it was. It was in division. We lost to number eight team, Cornell, number eight Cornell. And so now Quinnipiac drops down to number two in the rankings.
Whatever, bro. We didn't even want to be there anyway.
You know, one is the loneliest number.
It's no big deal. No big deal. No big deal. We'll see you in April, hopefully. That was sad to see. Thank you for that alma mater update, though. Let's go ahead and wrap this with some food talk. How's that sound?
Let's hashtag always in with the food.
Brought to you by Toasty Snacks, makers of the Toasty Bites, my favorite on-course snack and just a great healthy snack on the go. Check out toasty.com/COL, promo code COL20. We're wrapping January now, which means that dreadful 4-week period of the January cleanse diet is coming to an end for me. Mike, and I know the thing that you can get on board with, the real struggle, which you and I can agree with, is that I have made it through the month without one piece of bread. I did it, Mike. I made it to the finish line.
You know, that's impressive because I only one time in my life have I tried to go an entire Passover without having any leavened bread. And I failed that pretty miserably, actually, only because on the last day I thought it was over and it really wasn't. And I like went to McDonald's and had a hamburger or something.
Oh, just a mistaken error.
Wow. I know. Which also that probably wasn't a kosher meal to begin with. But, you know, whatever. So that you were able to go an entire month without consuming a single slice of bread. My hat is off to you. That's very impressive.
Yeah, I mean, the things I'm honestly craving are the real simple ones. It's not even anything super extravagant. It's just I want to like just go down to my kitchen and just make a freaking big grilled cheese on my pan. Mm-hmm. Like, that's it. Like, it's not even anything super elaborate. Like, I just want to go to my corner donut store and just grab a glazed donut and just scarf it down like 3 bites. That's it. It's just the real simple things that I'm missing there.
You got to savor it. You got to savor that donut. Savor that donut.
No time after the diet I was on. Nonetheless, no time.
I feel horrible though. You're out there not having any bread whatsoever. What, last weekend I made s'mores babka. This weekend the wife made a Meyer lemon bundt cake in our really intricate, deep grooved bundt cake pan that we've never ever been able to get anything out of without it breaking in half. And we did it. We got it out and it came out. She did it. And not only did she do it once, she did it twice. She made another one and gave it away. So it's just,
And you have, you have Kaya from, our Food Network friendship to help with that as well too. I remember you asked me about making bundt cakes and getting them out of the pan. So check out Always In With Food for our food interviews as well too. We had a really cool conversation with her this past year. But yes, that was a clean exit out of the pan too as well. It was always nice when the bundt comes out nice and clean.
Sounds dirty.
That was intentional. I was wondering if you'd get that reference. Oh, you did. That was Always End With Food and a wrap on this week's Course of Life. Say hi to me out there at the PGA show, and we'll see everyone next week.